by a local artist. So please join us for Noon Tunes, Monday through Friday, 12:20 p.m. here on WGTD HD.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, and Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters. Our topic today is Community Foundations Week in southeastern Wisconsin. My guests are Amy Grile, Executive Director of the Kenosha Community Foundation, Felicia Labator, representing a Kenosha Community Foundation-hosted scholarship, the Clay Davison Fund, Liz Powell, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Racine Community Foundation, and Carrie Hemig, representing an agency which that foundation helped to create to address an important community need. Carrie is a founder and executive director of Fight to End Exploitation. It aims to eradicate human trafficking and exploitation. We'll hear from each of them. I'm especially excited to hear from Felicia Labator about the Clay Davison Scholarship Fund and the 360 degree joy it has created. And I'm eager to learn from Carrie Hemig about her life-saving, life-changing agency. Good morning to you all.
Good morning, Len.
Good morning, Len. Good morning.
Let's get some context. Liz Powell of the Racine Community Foundation, we are in the midst of National Community Foundation Week, which begins today and continues through Friday. By the way, listeners, there are community foundations that serve everyone in the signal area of this radio station and elsewhere across the nation. In general, Liz, what are the more than 700 community foundations, and why do you celebrate this week? Please give us a quick overview of the mission of community foundations, which are an incredibly special subset of the not-for-profit community benefits sector.
Thank you, Len. Well, we celebrate Community Foundation Week to celebrate the good work that all the community foundations across the country do, and that is often unrecognized. A community foundation is a grant-making public charity that is dedicated to improving the lives of people in a defined local geographic area. They bring together the financial resources of individuals, families, and businesses to support effective nonprofits in their communities, as well as providing scholarship funds and organization endowment funds for local nonprofits. Community foundations play a key role in identifying and solving community problems. There are more than 900 community foundations operating in urban and rural areas in every state of the United States. And the community foundation model has also taken hold around the world. But we also like to say each community is different, so each community foundation is different. And Amy and I kind of shared that this morning when we met, talking about things that were the same and different about our two foundations. So how they benefit the communities is primarily through making grants to local nonprofit organizations to help them further their work. Most community foundations have a competitive grants process. Both Kenosha and Racine have such a process. And it's just a way to evaluate and then financially support nonprofits in the area. One thing that we've worked to try to dispel as far as attracting donors is that you don't have to be a millionaire to start a fund at a foundation. The Racine Community Foundation has a vehicle called the Acorn Fund, whereby not everybody has the financial wherewithal to write a big check to start a fund. You can start a fund with a donation as little as $600 a year. So we work with donors in whatever stage they are on their philanthropy journey, so to speak, and work with them to achieve their goals.
The Kenosha Community Foundation has a similar fund, doesn't it, Amy? A similar program.
Right. We would like to call it the Acorn. That sounds really more interesting, but ours is just the starter fund. But yeah, same idea, $600 a year, and we can put that to work.
That's great. Now, Amy, from the Kenosha Community Foundation, you and your guest have a wonderful story to tell about the Clay Davison Scholarship Fund. Amy Grau, you're the executive at the foundation, so please introduce your guest a little bit more for us, and let's hear from you both about the inspiring story of the origin and the purpose and the future of this fund.
Thank you, Len. I'm really pleased to be here with Felicia Labrador. I've gotten to know her a little bit over just the 3 weeks I've been in this new role. She is a woman of passion and hard work and vision. She's really spearheaded a lot of important work here in Kenosha in her professional space, but also in this philanthropic space. So rather than talk for her, I certainly like her to tell a little bit of the story about the Clay Davison Scholarship Fund. I'll just say we are extremely honored to be involved with this this fund and this initiative that is really aimed at mental health and bringing that out of the sort of stigma that exists and really, being part of the solution. So I'll pass it over to Felicia if she'd like to just say a little bit about herself and the story behind the fund.
Hi, thank you, Amy. And thank you, Len, for, having us on and bringing light to this. So I'm born, raised Kenosha. Graduated from Tremper High School, graduated from Gateway Technical College, and have been a police officer here for 26 years for the city of Kenosha. In 2014, I lost my son, Clay Davison, to suicide. He was 16 years old. Clay was, I describe, an it kid. He had what I think a lot of people would want. He was an athlete. He was funny. He was the one that all his friends went to. He was the comedian. He was smart. He was just everything. He was the one that all his friends even went to, like, for advice. However, because of some things that were happening with him through sports, he suffered some pretty severe injuries and he turned to steroids. And it started him on a very dark road. And being an it kid, he did not want to get help because of the stigma around mental health. And so he ended up taking his life when he was 16. But I have been devoted since that day to never let his life be about how it ended, but how he actually lived. And we created this scholarship in his name, the Clay Davison Legacy Scholarship Fund, because we want to help support people in our own community that want to go to school for mental health. There is such a shortage of this around the nation. Kenosha is no different. And so, you know, it's just a dream of mine. I was meeting with Amy last week and I told her, you know, I'd love to be 80 years old one day and have a picture of all these people that we have helped support go through school that are therapists that are helping thousands and thousands of families. Like, that is my dream someday. So we started the scholarship in his name and we're so excited to be able to award it to, you know, different people from Kenosha County area that want to help other people. That is my goal.
Amy and Felicia, I wonder if you would share with us how easy it is for someone to do this. What does it take? If someone has an idea like this, whatever the cause or the passion in the not-for-profit world, scholarships, whatever it is that they want to support, if they want to establish a fund to support something like that, that's close to their heart, what do they do? How do you start? You pick up the phone, send you an email. What's it about?
Sure, I can share a little bit, but then also pass it back to Felicia since she's been through the process. I would like to think that any donor can pick up the phone, much like Liz's website. We don't have to belabor it and make this really complicated in how your passion, your dreams can, you know, take shape here at the foundation. Just call us. We'll walk you through that process. And we don't need to overthink, I think, the mechanics of this. We just want to be here for the donor and make sure that their wishes can be carried out in the form of an agreement and then just managed through our various processes here that hopefully are catered to the wishes of the donor. As I say, Felicia, would you like to speak about what that looked like for you?
I'll just say that it's been such a great process, and anybody that would ever be interested in starting something like this, I would definitely say come to you, because you guys, you know, my story is obviously different than most stories, but it's hard enough to, you know, to manage what we're managing and to put something together like that. And you guys have made it so easy. Like, start to today, you know, we started this however many, four maybe years ago, and every single process is just so easy, which helps like me be able to do the work that I'm doing. So I would definitely encourage anybody to just reach out and give a call, because you guys just walk us through the process.
Well, that's great. And the thing to remember about community foundations, which I'm pretty familiar with, is that they have experts at their command to help, and they will work with your financial experts, because everyone should, when they make a gift of any magnitude, really, if it's a major gift for them, whatever that is, if it's a major gift for you, you want to get tax advice and you want to get financial advice. And so you bring your advisors to the table, they bring their advisors to the table, and the experts work it out on your behalf. It's pretty simple and easy process. Let me get back to you, Liz, president of the Racine Community Foundation. Liz, you can illustrate something that community foundations are doing increasingly, and that's identifying a community need and then partnering with a not-for-profit organization to address that problem. Liz and Carrie, please discuss this for us and what it is that your marvelous organization is doing, Carrie. Liz?
Thanks, Len. Well, this partnership, I'll call it, came about at the behest of our former police chief, who brought quite a crew to our office, all in uniform. So it was slightly intimidating, but they were all very nice people, and talked to us about the issue of human trafficking, and that actually the Racine Dominicans went to Chief Howell and said, you need to do something about this. He said, I realized they weren't asking, they were telling me I had to do something, which the little nuns were pretty direct with him. So after that, that's how we learned about it, and then learned about Carrie and others starting the fight to end exploitation. So Carrie, I don't know if you want to talk about how the impetus for this and how you got involved with the fight to end exploitation.
Sure. Thanks, Liz. Thanks, Len. Yeah, it's been on and off. We've been probably partnering for the last 10 years, and we were really, it all began, like Liz said, when they started investigating their first case, and the investigator was really, you know, calling these girls on their birthdays, checking up to make sure they were doing okay, doing a lot of that social service work, because at that point, human trafficking wasn't really, it wasn't as discussed in the community. There wasn't as many services wrapped around it. So we started working on that, and we found out the gaps were that there wasn't anybody really working on human trafficking. So we began that process. And ever since then, we've developed an advocacy volunteer team that we oversee that works with victims. We go on proactive operations with law enforcement to do victim recoveries. We train all kinds of system professionals. And so we've been able to do all of these things with the help of the Racine Community Foundation. It's almost like they're an incubator for social entrepreneurs who need to find answers for these complex social solutions that we're all dealing with. And not only do they fund us, but more importantly to us almost, is that they fund the service providers that help the human trafficking victims. So they're funding the shelters, they're funding the programs that our victims need. So it really is a collaborative effort just to keep our community healthy.
And now, what is the relationship between the two organizations? How is that going in the present and into the future, Liz?
Well, I'd like to think that the foundation provides more than just a check, that we're a resource, a connector of organizations and people in the community. So we have continued to fund the fight to end exploitation. And then Carrie was on the board, and now she's back as the executive director, and we're thrilled to have her back. It's a collaboration. And I just can't say enough about working with Carrie and the folks at the fight to end exploitation. And it's not too often, at least in my tenure, that we've actually been able to help get a new organization off the ground. So it's been really gratifying to see the progress and the strides that are made, and also that people don't necessarily say, oh, there's no human trafficking in our community anymore. I think the awareness has really increased due to the work that Carrie and her cohorts do. I don't know, Carrie, what would you like to comment on that?
Absolutely. I totally agree. It's much more than just the funding. It's the support in general. It's the access to their board and their other experts that they have within their own foundation. And since then, we've been able to help over 450 victims. We've assisted victims as young as 10 years old as 62 years old, both in labor and sex trafficking. And we have now reached training people all over the world from Malaysia, South America, within the United States. So it's really gone even beyond Racine County in some respects, but really our focus is to remain here as a community asset.
What a wonderful story. You're listening to Community Matters. Today, we're talking about Community Foundation Week, and my guests are Amy Grile, Executive Director of the Kenosha Community Foundation, Felicia Labator, representing a community foundation-hosted scholarship fund, the Clay Davison Fund, Liz Powell, President and CEO of the Racine Community Foundation, and Carrie Hemmig. She represents an agency that that foundation helped create. The agency is called Fight to End Exploitation. It aims to eradicate human trafficking and exploitation. Well, yes, community foundations do more than just write a check for a scholarship for a student or for an organization. They provide management of the funds. They can create investment pools that have a far greater rate of return than you might get otherwise because they have a larger corpus to invest and they have expert investment managers to take care of it. They do all the paperwork. You can also have a donor-advised fund at a foundation, and I think that's the next thing I'd like to have us talk about, because donor-advised funds are really one of the biggest things going on in philanthropy right now, and they can be large, or they can be relatively small. A few thousand dollars can create a donor-advised fund that could either be temporary for a period of years or permanent by being made an endowment. Liz, do you want to lead off a little bit and talk about the donor advised funds and why those are so great?
Thanks, Len. They are great, despite what some of the law tax professors are writing about. They are a wonderful vehicle for people who want to make their community better. All of our donor advised funds at the Racine Community Foundation are endowed. So it's a great vehicle for somebody when they're living to make those decisions, but then their legacy will be that the fund will be at our community foundation forever to benefit the community. So donor advised funds legally belong to the foundation, and the donors reserve the right to advise on grants out of those funds. They've been coming under fire because there's a perception that donors get the tax benefit when they make the donation, but there's no mechanism to make sure that those funds go back out into the community. So we've adopted an inactive funds policy just to be proactive to say, yes, we do have a mechanism so that the funds go back out into the community. Our rule of thumb is that we ask that 50% of the grants stay in Racine County, and it's way higher than that because our donors really want to help the nonprofits in our community thrive.
Anything you'd like to add to that, Amy?
No, Liz is just masterful and certainly posing as a mentor to me. So yes, I follow her lead. Beautifully stated, Liz.
I'd like to also point out that within our listening area, we have the Racine Community Foundation, the Kenosha Community Foundation, the Whitewater Community Foundation, the Community Foundation of Southern Wisconsin, the Bigfoot Community Fine Arts Foundation, the Walworth County Community Foundation. I may have missed a few, and I haven't even talked about the Lake County listeners, because we have a fair share of Northeastern Lake County listeners to WGTD. So wherever you live, there's a community foundation that probably serves your area, your community, or at least your region. So the community foundation story is a big one. It's a national one. And community foundations are ways that individuals, solo or with their families or with others in the community, can have a really, really important impact. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the agency that you represent, Carrie.
I wonder if you would just tell us a little bit more. Could you tell us maybe a story or two, or an overview of the cases you work with, so we have a better feel for how this partnership has been so important for our area?
Absolutely. A lot of the times when we're working with victims, we're not quite sure what they're going to need initially. So it's always important to do an initial assessment. You know, do you have a safe place to stay? Do you have access to medication, to food, to clothing, to shelter? So these are the type of things that we provide, and not really knowing, you know, what's going to be coming down the pike, what sort of influx of victims we're going to have, what sort of needs we're going to have. The ability to use that funding to our own discretion through the Community Foundation is really important, because one victim may need transportation out of state to go to a safe program. We've had victims who have been on expensive medications for, you know, life-altering issues and did not have insurance, so we bridged the gap until the insurance could kick in. A lot of times we have victims who need a safe place to stay, and potentially a shelter is not a good accommodation, so we're able to provide emergency funding for housing. So each way it can be used in for different reasons. And so I think really having that flexibility to really support the victim with what they need, because also COVID has really changed things. Whereas we had plenty of shelter beds before, shelter beds were cut in half for many years. There just wasn't as much. So even getting a victim into a shelter, there could be a 5-day or a 4-day wait to get in. And so having that gap money to be able to cover for safe housing for somebody is so critical.
So people can make gifts directly to your agency, right? What's the name of your agency again?
Fight to End Exploitation? Yes, absolutely. Although I would say that if somebody wanted to, like Liz said, you know, donate a large sum of money, they wanted to leave, you know, some of their estate, I would prefer they go through a community foundation to make that donation. And then I would work with the community foundation, because like you said, those are where the experts are with the plan giving, with estate management, things of that nature.
Liz, want to pick up on that?
Well, sure. I would say some of our largest funds came as bequests for people who remembered us in their will. We do have verbiage on our website for professionals to put in estate plans if they need to. But I think the most impactful funds we've had have been bequests, and we're so grateful for them. We've been able to, some of them have come in unrestricted, and others have come in the form of field of interest funds. But it's always it's just amazing how generous people are. And we always say, you never know the impact of somebody being in our community. Because one of our biggest funds we got was from an estate from a gentleman who lived in Connecticut. And he came to Racine as a boy in the summer, and he loved it. And so when he died, we got a few million dollars of unrestricted funds. And so, like we say, you just never know who's going to be in the community, what kind of impact where they are in the community will make on them. And then, you know, obviously a lot of these things we have no idea, and then we're notified by the estate planning attorney once the person has passed. So it is amazing what kind of generosity people are capable of, and then to benefit the community the way that generosity does.
Of course, unrestricted gifts are wonderful, but the listener may say, well, if it's an unrestricted gift that I were to give, well, then how would it be used? Now, of course, it would be used within the constraints of the charter of a community foundation, which is to serve its community or regional area of operation. But there's more to it than that. Liz, and then Amy, you want to just talk about how your foundations decide when it's an unrestricted fund that someone puts up, how you put it to good work in the community?
Well, on our end at the Racine Community Foundation, unrestricted money really is all in our competitive grants process. That's what I think this year we're able to grant $1.7 million into the community, which is mind-blowing. Again, people are just so generous. And so unrestricted funds primarily go into our competitive grants process.
Same here, Len.
And what kind of organizations can apply for those grants, Amy and Liz?
Any nonprofit, 501c3 nonprofit, is eligible to apply through our process here. And you know, if you don't have that 501c3, but you have a compelling project, please talk to us, because we're always looking for, you know, how to embed ourselves into the community. Perhaps Carrie, you know, had the notion prior to the 501c3, and that's an example of, you know, cultivating a new cause for a foundation. So yeah, we're here to kind of see the best path for your particular interest.
Isn't innovation part of the DNA of a community foundation, Liz?
It is. I mean, we go to both ends of the spectrum. We like innovation, but then we also really like to support the organizations that we've supported for a number of years and have a really good working relationship with, and know the good work that they do in the community. So we like our tried and true, and we like innovation too. And I always tell my board of directors, do we want every grant to work out? Of course we do, but we know that they won't always. I mean, that it may not be a successful endeavor, and that's okay. I'd rather say we help try than to say no in the first place.
Do your foundations provide general operating support for an organization to help them be a better? Or do you just always want them to have some specific new project that you're going to fund?
Amy? It's a great question. Yeah, it's a great question. I believe we do both. I believe that Liz also, we spoke about it this morning, and operating capital is important within their giving strategy as well, just because at times other funders don't want to get in that game, if you will.
That's right. And that's one of the things that makes a community foundation so important to an area, isn't it? Now, I wonder if we should talk a little bit more about how people can make a gift. Amy, you can just get together with you or a member of your staff and say, I'll write a check. What else could you do? I suppose you could donate appreciated securities, or any securities, but appreciated securities usually make a good gift. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and let's just talk it over. I mean, in my experience, there's a lot of different paths. So I guess I can't get into all the specifics at this time, but we certainly have the experts on staff to find that information and find the match for you. I'll let Liz get into, I'm sure she has much more of a hold on the complexities that can go into giving.
Thank you, Amy. We try to make it as easy as possible. I mean, we don't want to make it hard for people to donate money to us. So we have a portal on our website. So you can do it on your credit card. You can write a check. You can, as Len mentioned, donate appreciated securities, although with market conditions, if anybody has those, that would be outstanding. But with the market the way it is, we haven't seen too much of that happen this year. And then there's different ways you can make a qualified charitable distribution from an IRA to the foundation. However, the only kind of fund that cannot accept a QCD or qualified charitable distribution is a donor advised fund. The IRS has put the kibosh on that type of a gift, but to any other kind of fund, or to our general fund, a qualified charitable distribution would be great.
And the ability to give money out of one's individual retirement account is really quite marvelous. I've made in my career donors very happy by helping them unlock funds that are unneeded, because many people, especially professionals, tend to accumulate more money in their retirement accounts than they ever have any idea they're going to spend. And they have charitable intent. And I don't know about you, but I've discovered that it's much more fun to make charitable gifts while I'm alive. It's just more rewarding somehow. And unlocking the extra money, the excess money you have in your IRA, is a wonderful way to do it. And you can do this when you reach a qualifying age, right? In your 70s, in your early 70s. And there are tax advantages to doing it. You make the gift directly to the charity. It doesn't pass through your hands whatsoever. It depends on what kind of money you're donating, but basically you are getting it out of your estate. It counts toward your mandatory distribution from your retirement fund. So that's an advantage to you. And it's also a wonderful way to make a gift that unlocks money that otherwise cannot be used for charitable purposes. Many people are doing it. That was a temporary provision of the tax code for many years, but it's been made permanent now. So it's something that people can plan on. If you're in your 50s or 60s and you want to do it when you reach your early 70s, you can plan on doing that now because you know that possibility is there. Now, the tax advantages of giving to the donor advised fund are also good. As you mentioned, you get a tax deduction for the gift as soon as you make it to a community foundation. And yes, there is some criticism that there's a lot of money locked up in donor advised funds. And some people think they need to be given out much faster than others. That's a political and economic point of view. But all of that money eventually has to go for not-for-profit charitable purposes anyway, no matter how long it takes. And it's just a matter of opinion as to whether you want to get out faster or sooner. The politicians will take care of that. You don't have to worry about it, gentle listener. But this is a fabulous tool to make a gift for those who are able to do so. Now, there are other ways to think about community foundations too. And one of them is that they strengthen our communities. I wonder if you would comment a little bit more, Liz, about the ways community foundations strengthen their community.
Well, I think it's that we cast a wide net. We don't fund just one thing. We fund across various different funding ideas, whether it be health, environment, education, human services, community development. People all say, tell me about your work. And I say, our work is that we fund those who actually do the work. And so I think that community foundations strengthen the community by funding across various types of organizations. We also, I think, strengthen communities by offering scholarships for young people like Felicia. And we have a lot of former educators who've started scholarship funds. And I think it's a wonderful resource for young people graduating from high school. And we also manage organization endowment funds for our various nonprofits. Like you had mentioned, Lynn, we have a professional investment advisor and very well diversified portfolio. And I think that just like I had said working with Carrie is that, we like to think we're more than just writing a check, that we are a connector, that we can connect donors with causes, we can connect the foundation with causes. I just think that because we cast a wide net and don't have a primary focus, we're able to help the entire community.
And that lets you move in quickly when there's a community need to respond to, which is a really wonderful thing. You and your board have that power, which many organizations don't have. Felicia Laboratory, the fund memorializing your son, the scholarship fund. I wonder if you'd like to talk a little bit more about the emotional rewards that you're getting from that. I imagine you've met with some of the scholarship recipients now because the fund's been established for a while. What's that been like for you?
Yeah, you know, it's wonderful. We have a group of people that meet that we consider is our board. They go through all of the scholarships and kind of rank them and then give them to us. And we actually sit as a family, myself, my husband, and my two other sons, and we make a night of it and we read through them together and we talk about what these people have going on in their life and how do they connect with Clay. And it's been wonderful. And then I actually call the winners and tell them that they've won. I offer to meet with them. I'm like, please invite me when you graduate from college. Like it's very, very personal to us. And it's amazing to be able to give back to the community. Honestly, I've already served here for 26 years, but to continue that through Clay's name is just amazing because I feel like mental health touches every family somehow. And it's awesome to be able to talk with them and hear their own stories and see what they want to do.
Have any of your scholarship recipients yet graduated?
Not yet. I think next year will be the first one.
Where from?
She is at, oh gosh, you put me on the spot. We have so
that's
many.
Okay.
I think she's at UW-Milwaukee.
Oh, so in the area, you could go to that graduation if she can wangle an extra ticket. And I know how hard it is to get graduation tickets, having been in the university world most of my career. Wow, that's really cool. Now, Liz and Amy, do you have fundraisers for any of these funds that your foundations administer? I know the Kenosha Community Foundation partners with the Mahone Fund and works, and they do some fundraisers. I don't know if any fundraisers are planned for the Davison Scholarship Fund. Why don't you tell me what your plans are coming up?
Well, I'll just start here that we do have a fundraising policy at the Kenosha Community Foundation, and we're looking to support those that have funds with us and how they can engage in fundraising. It's been a big learning curve for me, certainly with the Mahone Fund, kind of such a visible entity here in Kenosha. So as Felicia gets kind of up to speed on her options, you know, we're here to support that. We just have to ensure that everything is being held according to our policies, and I'll be working on that certainly as we move forward so that we have clear protocol around the fundraising. Maybe Liz wants to talk about why they don't engage in fundraising on behalf of their funds in Racine Community Foundation, just as a point of divergence, I suppose, from our approach.
I think in my tenure, we had one, and we as well have a fundraising policy, part of the national standards that we adhere to at the foundation. We did have one fund that did some fundraising, but then they got their own 501c3 status, and then they're off of our policy once they have their own 501c3 status. It's a different community foundation, and our funds do not do active fundraising. They just don't. I guess it's a cultural thing, or maybe they just don't have the energy to do it, because fundraising is a lot of work.
That's the most common in community foundations, in my understanding. But you were working together, it sounds like. And I wonder if you would tell us a little bit more about how you've started to work together already, because Liz, you're an older hand at this, and Amy, you've been in the not-for-profit sector and have great knowledge of the sector, but this particular facet of it is new for you. You've just been in the job just under a month now. What are you thinking about in terms of collaboration? This Kenosha Racine area is more and more integrated every year. I'm 78 years old, and there's a big change in the last three or four decades, in particular the last 20 years, in terms of the integration of the communities. It's hard to find an agency or a business that's locally founded that doesn't have a relationship already in both communities. So I guess it behooves the community foundations to start thinking of it that we're in a region, and that the problems and the opportunities do cross county lines, right? What do you think, Amy?
Well, if you ask me, coming from the nonprofit sector, I just see partnerships and collaboration as not only a like to have, but we've got to find ways of doing that. I am, you know, my history has been so focused on, you know, managing a relationship so that we can really leverage the full breadth of resources out there. And I have no doubt that Liz, I mean, even in the few weeks I've been in this role, that Liz has a wealth of knowledge and experience that Kenosha Community Foundation can benefit from. And I certainly plan to bring all of that life lessons and all of that rich experience to, you know, Felicia, to all of our donors. We can certainly win by sharing information and best practices. So yeah, anything that I can glean from Liz over the years to come, I'm going to be directly, you know, sharing that locally here in Kenosha. I don't see this as being, you know, silo. We are in this work together.
Liz, do you want to carry that ball a little further?
Well, I just think that when Amy and I spoke today, being in a leadership role can be kind of isolating. And I'm sure Carrie can appreciate that as well, that having a peer to bounce ideas off of or get advice from it's invaluable. And I was in contact with Jane prior to Amy starting. And then believe it or not, I worked with Bob Schneider at Johnson Bank. So I have a little bit of a tenure there at Kenosha, but I just, anything we can do to help each other do the work that we do, we have to do it. And it's a pleasure at the same time. So I can't say enough about having a peer so close to me like Amy.
One of the problems that a lot of organizations are addressing is mental health, and this goes into your territory, Felicia. I wonder if the community foundations are thinking of doing anything in terms of the mental health area. We're getting supposedly more beds downtown by freighter leasing out space to another organization. The university is adding curricula with respect to mental health. Either of you have anything to say about future plans of your foundations in that area?
Well, our foundation's been involved in the Collaborative on Children's Mental Health since the onset, and we currently fund school-based mental health clinics. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but now Racine Unified has 10 clinics. One is a community clinic and the other ones are embedded in the various school buildings. So we've been involved in that. We also fund Children's Wisconsin for their providers here in Racine. And we fund Catholic Charities for their Spanish speaking therapists and the Hope Center in downtown Racine. So we are obviously, mental health is on our radar. We try to do whatever we can to help. And especially at the district level with little people. Our first clinics in Racine were in elementary schools, and this year they just opened 2 in the high schools. So just making sure there aren't those barriers to seeking care and helping whatever way we can.
That's great. Amy, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, and I'd echo that. I mean, we have such a long history. You know, we've been around nearly 100 years, and our, you know, giving our contributions to the community, they may not be called mental health, but if we're working around homelessness, we're working around domestic violence, we're working along alcohol, you know, AODA issues. I mean, it's you know, we're all kind of in this realm together. And certainly since the pandemic, things have become so much more visible as far as this is, I think, the area of the future where, you know, we need to be explicitly. So that's why I'm really excited to have Felicia with us, because, you know, these are the sorts of causes that we'd really like to articulate and get behind. So,
well, that's terrific. Amy, as we close, what's your hope for the Kenosha Community Foundation in the next year or two?
So I'm a new executive director that's been funded at a full-time rate, which is really exciting for Kenosha Community Foundation because we've never had a full-time executive director. We've, you know, just, I'm looking at like a comprehensive sort of assessment of like, where are those like low-hanging fruit and how do we, you know, really pedal to the metal as far as relationship building. Bob Schneider, Jane Harrington, Heidi, they've gotten the table set. And I really am excited to finally like look at all the pieces that have been sort of, you know, just from lack of capacity, like how can we look at this differently and really, I mean, go after the the ambitious goals that Liz has pursued for years. You know, we look at them as kind of our big sister here. And certainly we have our own playbook and our own dynamics in this community. But I really want to see what's possible with the set table. And like I say, just really getting into the relationships in this community and putting Kenosha Community Foundation at the center of all of those things.
That's great. Liz, same question. What do you see immediately ahead for your foundation?
I think just strengthening our relationships with our donors and our grantees. COVID didn't help in that regard. And we really like to do site visits just from the standpoint we get to see our grantees where they work, so to speak, and we're not there with the magnifying glass saying, what did you do with our money? It's there, we go so we can learn, and then that helps us communicate with our donors. So doing more of that as time allows, and just cherishing that, stewarding the assets that we have so we can continue to make the impact in Racine County that we can.
Well, those are very, very important causes. And Amy, you are so right. The Kenosha Community Foundation has come a long way in the last few years, and your two immediate predecessors in that position, and they were only half time, did a terrific job. They have set the table well for you, and you're very lucky.